Well, good morning. I mean, if you don't get bobbing a little bit to that, you got something wrong with you. Like I said earlier, we are so incredibly excited, whether you're here in person or joining us online, as we continue with part two of this series we've been in that we're calling Greater Reward. And if you're here for the very first time or checking us out online for the first time or maybe just here for the first time during this particular series, this entire series revolves around this ridiculously simple concept. That in every single one of our lives, we process every decision we make based upon the reward. That we base every decision we make in every facet of our lives based upon the outcome we want. And when given the choice, every single one of us would choose the greatest possible reward. You see, only a crazy person, when given the option between fine and great, would choose fine. No, every single one of us want great in our lives. And yet, for so many of us, while we have this desire deep down to achieve great and to experience the greater reward that God has for our lives, our marriages, our parenting, our finances, our careers, and on and on and on, we find ourselves making choices that leave us at fine. And the question is this: how do we break free from that? How do we begin to make changes in our lives or in that facet of our lives that allow us to experience the greater reward that God has designed us for and that he's fighting for us to experience in that particular part of our lives, for us to experience life to the full? Now, let me ask you this question. How many of you guys have ever found yourself making the same goal year after year? Like, you started out a year and you saw something in your life or maybe in your marriage or your finances or in your health that was broken. And you became determined to fix that one thing. And so you set a goal or a path in how you would fix that thing. And then a year passes and you look back and what you find is that that thing is still broken. That there has been no forward movement. And so what do? You say, this is the year that I'll finally improve that thing, and you make the same goal again, only to wake up one day, like 10 years down the road, right, and you had made that goal to be 20 pounds lighter, and here you find yourself stepping on the scale, and you're actually 10 pounds heavier than where you started 10 years ago. You see, maybe if only for your psyche, there's good news here. Do you realize that 80% of New Year's resolutions end within the first 6 weeks? So if you find yourself still pressing towards the goal in the middle of February, you are in the top 20% of people in the world, because 80% of New Year's resolutions fail within the first 6 weeks. There's this reality in our lives that we keep falling short of what we desire and the greatness that we want to achieve in every facet of our lives. But hear me out on this. The reason that we continue to fall short is not because of a lack of trying. You see, every single one of us in this room have found ourselves adequately trying to reach the goals and the greater rewards we want in that facet of our life that has become broken. But the reality is we can't seem to fix that thing. We want change, but we can't. We want it to be better, but it doesn't seem to happen. It works for a couple days that we're nicer to our spouse, or a couple weeks that we start to cut that thing out of our diet, or it works for a couple months that we stop overspending, but then it doesn't last. And last week, we kicked off this series by underlining this truth. That in order for us to find lasting change in our lives that leads us towards the greater reward, it requires us to embrace this one word: discipline. And as soon as that one word is uttered, many of us get the shudders, don't we? Many of us start to shiver inside because we have had this negative connotation that's been associated with discipline. Like, here we go, we're going to start talking about discipline. It's the fun police showing up to rob me of everything that's fun in my life. Ben, I've tried discipline, and discipline is hard. Discipline's too difficult. Discipline leads towards failure, because Ben, what you don't know about me is I just wasn't created as a disciplined person. Like, God made me laid back, and I just go with the flow, and I just take every day as it comes at me, and I'm not really all down for this discipline thing. And maybe for so long, the reason why we've shied away from discipline and we've had this negative connotation attached to it is because we've had the wrong definition of discipline all along. You see, what if we rearranged the definition of discipline to be something that was far more relevant and attainable in every single one of our lives? What I believe with all of my heart is that a truer definition of discipline is really this. Discipline is choosing what we want most over what we want now. Did you catch that? Discipline in every single one of our lives is simply done by choosing what we want most over what we want now. And the reality for many of us that we embraced last week was this, is that having discipline in our life is not done by exerting more willpower and making it all about me. Last week, we began this journey by introducing this God element into our journey and this reality that in order for us to take steps forward, our declaration must actually be this: with God's help, I will choose what I want most over what I want now. This reality in every single one of our lives that every creation operates best in the hands of the Creator. Think about any object on this earth and we would recognize that truth. It doesn't matter if it's a computer or a robot or any simple piece of creation. Every creation operates best in the hands of its Creator. Why? Because the Creator knows the intricacies of its creation. It knows how it was put together. It knows its operating system. It knows every detail of how that thing functions and how it works at its optimum level. And the same is true in your life and in my life, that in order for us to experience our best, the Creator has to have some control over our lives. But maybe, just maybe, the most difficult part from moving from fine to great is the humility it requires for us to recognize that things aren't quite as they should be. It's the moment of our life where we come face to face with that thing that's broken and are forced to admit, this just isn't working. I'm not getting it done on my own. I'm failing at this. I'm falling short. I need help. And last week, we were forced to acknowledge this truth that in order for us to take the next step, there are elements of our lives in which we must open up our hands and allow the Creator to have control. That in order for us to experience a greater reward that the God of the universe wants for us, why wouldn't we allow the God of the universe to have some control over us? To have some control over our lives and our futures and our marriages and our parenting and our finances and our health and our careers and our relationships. That every creation operates best when placed in the hands of the Creator. In order to experience the greater reward, it can't all be on me. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a shift that doesn't still need to happen within every single one of us. That while there's this God element to every single one of our journeys that allows us to experience the greater reward that God has for us, there's an acknowledgement that's necessary that every single one of us have work to do on ourselves as well. And this work that every single one of us must do is perfectly outlined by this guy that we introduced last week, a guy named Paul. If you've never heard of Paul, Paul's a guy who wrote about 50% of the books in the New Testament. Scholars debate about 13 to 14 out of the 27 books in the New Testament were written by Paul. One of the greatest missionaries of all time. A guy who encountered the risen Jesus on the road to Damascus and changed his life around that. A guy who had been thrown in jail. A guy who had been shipwrecked. A guy whose every turn was used to advance the kingdom, even if his circumstances were dismal. A guy who was chosen to write a vast majority of one of the greatest and most widely distributed books of all time. And that very dude sets the record straight on what it looks like for us as humanity to be able to experience the greater reward God has for us, not just in eternity, but in our lives and what we have remaining of our lives here on this earth. And this week we take a step forward. You see, he begins to outline, unlike last week where he talked about this change of relinquishing control in our lives, this week in his first letter to the church in Corinth, he begins to write about the changes we have to make in ourselves. This morning, we're going to dive into 1 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in verse 24. And if you haven't done so already, it's a perfect time for you to grab that notes page out of the middle of your weekly and follow along as we move through the text. Everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But here is what Paul writes, starting in verse 24. Don't you realize that in a race, everyone runs, but only one person gets the prize? So run to win. All athletes are disciplined in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away. And here is this defining moment where Paul speaks directly to every single person in this room, right here, right now, today, who consider themselves to be Christ followers. He says everybody else is running a race to achieve and acquire something that will fade away. But for those of us who have a relationship with Christ, this is so good. We do it for an eternal prize. There's more at stake than a gold medal. There's more at stake than a bigger paycheck. No, there's an eternal prize that's waiting for us. And because of that, run to win. Run to win. Give it everything you possibly have to be successful and to win at this thing. It's like 2,000 years ago, one of the greatest missionaries of all time was laying down this statement that was brought about and reintroduced to us through one of the greatest theologians of our time, a guy by the name of Ricky Bobby. If anybody has heard of him, he said something like this: if you ain't first, you're last. Thank y'all, second service. Nobody in the first service laughed at Ricky Bobby. I thought this was just a perfect warm-up for At the Movies. And no, Talladega Nights is not on the docket for At the Movies this year. If you ain't first, you're last. You see, Paul and Ricky Bobby were underlining this truth. You play to win the game. And maybe even Herm Edwards. You play to win the game. You play to be successful. You play to give it your all. You play to go after the greater reward that God has placed in front of you with everything you have. And to give you a little insight at what Paul was working with in his time period, we flash back way before Ricky Bobby to a Greek philosopher by the name of Epictetus. And Epictetus was this guy who was riding around the time of the first Olympic Games. And here is what he wrote about the runners, about the athletes competing in the Olympic Games. Check this out. He wrote, "If you withdraw without sufficient reason, you will be whipped. And this whipping comes after your training, which involves thirst and broiling heat and swallowing handfuls of sand." If you quit, this is what Epictetus is saying. If you quit and you don't give it your all, you'll be whipped. Give it your best, or it's not worth playing at all. Hello. For all of us who walked into this room who are Christ followers, those of you who didn't, this is a moment to relax a little bit. You're off the hook. For those of us who walked into this room who are Christ followers, this is the defining moment. If you aren't going to play the game, strive after the mission and the purpose that God has given you for your life, that he's setting before you, that it's not even worth playing at all. Hello. Y'all okay? And you see, I think the problem that many of us run into in our lives is this, is that we live in a world and are surrounded by people. We run into circumstances every single day that make it easy for us to rationalize away the joy that is found in giving it our very best, in giving everything we have. And if there's one piece of advice that maybe, just maybe, would drive us forward to help us begin as Christ followers to live as Paul is charging us to live, it would be this. Don't find yourself, don't give in to rationalizing away the joy that is found in giving God your best. Don't rationalize away the joy that is found in giving God your very best. Man, if you've never experienced this in your life, don't miss out on the opportunity to experience giving the creator of the universe your very best. Because what I know and what I can promise you is this, is that when you engage in that, man, there's something joyous and exhilarating and fulfilling about knowing that I gave everything I had to God and the mission and the vision and the things that he's given me, the purposes in my life that he has gifted me with. I gave him everything I could in all the right ways. You see, we all want to be successful. And God wants us to experience that as well. So the question is this. Why are we settling for less? Why am I settling for less? I don't have to say y'all okay. Ben Carver, are you okay? Why do I find myself being okay with fine in different facets of my life? When the creator of the universe destined me for better than fine. Why do I believe this with all of my heart? Because when we pick up God's word, his instruction manual for our lives, there is nowhere in God's word where we find, hey, it's all right to just get by and just be fine. No, what we find time and time again are charges from our Heavenly Father and his Son who put on flesh and came and walked on this earth to strive, to be successful, and to win. We go all the way back to the creation story when he placed the first human being on this earth, Adam. Do you know what the first instruction he gave Adam was? Be fruitful and multiply. Hello. Guys, can I get an amen? Be fruitful and multiply. When we go back to the original Hebrew language, you know what is really being said here? That word fruitful, to bear fruit, means to be successful, to produce what you have been called to produce what you have been created to produce. It's not fine to just be branches and leaves. You have been called to be successful, to win, to produce fruit. And then we fast forward. When Jesus comes and he walks on this earth, he tells this incredible story in the form of a parable. It's a story of a master and his three servants. And the master is preparing for a trip to go away for some time. And he calls these three servants into his office and he says, I'm preparing to go on a trip. I want to entrust you with some of my wealth. So I'm entrusting each of you with talents, with money. And when I come back, I'll collect a report of what you've done with the talents that I've entrusted you with. And so he gives some to the first servant, and he gives some to the second servant, and he gives some to the third servant. And upon return, what he finds is this. The first and the second servant have taken the talents, have taken the money that have been given to them, and what did they do? They invested the money. They put the money to work. They worked the money, and they multiplied the talents that had been given to them. And then the master came to the third servant. And what did he find? The servant, in fear, had buried the gift that had been given to him. And he stated, I knew that you were a harsh master, and I was afraid that if I lost your money, the punishment would befall upon me. And so I buried the money, and I did nothing with it so that I could present you with exactly what you've given to me. And in response, what did the master say? He didn't just call the third servant lazy. No, he said, you wicked and lazy servant. And this is so incredible. His reaction was he took the talent that was given to the third servant who did nothing with the gift that was given to him, and he gave it to the two servants who had worked and given everything they had to multiply the talents that had been given to them. And we fast forward. In the very last breath that Jesus has on this earth before he leaves, the charge that he gives to every single one of us as the local church and as Christ followers was this. Go and make disciples of all nations. You want to talk about a lofty calling, a lofty goal? That's it. But we have a God who looked at every single one of us and he said, go, make disciples of all nations, win hearts, win souls, make heaven more crowded. And if I was standing there, you know what I would have said? I'm not qualified for that. I'm not good enough for that. And yet we have a God who looks at us and says, yes, you are. I've created you to be good. I've created you to be successful. I've created you to live out the greater reward. Now it's time for you to go and do it. To give everything you have to accomplish what's been set before you. Every single one of those things is about forward movement. Every single one of those things is about success. But as I think about those different occurrences, there was this question that rose in my mind this week. Then why am I not winning? Then why doesn't it feel like I'm winning in my marriage? Why doesn't it feel like I'm winning in my parenting? Why doesn't it feel like I'm winning in my finances or in my health or in my career, in my job that I show up to and feel stuck at every single day? Why am I not winning? And hear me on this loud and clear. It's something that I said briefly earlier. See, the reason we aren't winning isn't because of a lack of trying. I mean, I look into my own heart, I look into your guys' life, and what I'm going to acknowledge is that every single one of us have tried to accomplish the greater reward. We've tried to move towards that. But what if this morning I shifted our perspective in such a way that I brought to light that maybe trying was the problem? That maybe the trying was the issue. That this point in time, it was time for a new approach, a more strategic approach. That in order for us to really move forward and to begin to live life to its fullest and experience the greater reward God has for us in that facet of our life that feels broken and feels like we're falling short, that we have to stop trying and start training. That we have to stop trying and we have to start training. You see, these two words are vastly different from one another and require vastly different things from us every single day. You see, trying can be simply defined as this. Trying is an attempt to change with minimal commitment. It's an attempt to change with minimal commitment. I'm trying and whatever happens, happens. I'm just giving it a try, right? That's how we use that word. That's how we use that verb. I'm just trying this out. And if I like it, then I'll stick with it. And if I don't, it's all right to let this go by the wayside. But training holds a completely different definition. You see, training can be more adequately defined as a total commitment towards a specific result. Training requires an absolute total commitment to achieve a specific result. You see, when we just try something, it never brings about lasting change. But training, on the other hand, always brings about lasting change. Training always brings something to the table that it slowly morphs us into someone different, slowly grows us into something more. You see, for me, one of the most frustrating parts of my morning routine every single morning with my boys is socks and shoes time. Y'all remember back to those days? If any of y'all are terrible parents like I am, what you've done in the mornings as you're getting your kids ready for school is this. Like in the last few minutes of hustle, when it's like, okay, I got to get the book bags ready and they're going to the babysitters after I pick them up from preschool. And so I got to get Snoopy and I got to get Blanky and I got to get Monkey and I got to get, if you're anal like me, I got to get socks that match the outfit and then the right pairs of shoes that match the outfit that they're wearing today as well. And boys, so that you're not in my head and I can accomplish all of that in the next 5 minutes so that we're not late to school, it's time to turn on some Paw Patrol. And just sit there and watch Paw Patrol while I get all the final details ready. And as you do that and they're completely 100% engaged in the show, I come over with socks and shoes. And we begin to put on their socks. And then Krista and I, we will never make this mistake again in our marriage. We bought these new shoes from Adidas. And if you've bought any Adidas shoes lately, they've got like mesh all the way around the body of the shoe. And anytime you try to put your foot in, right, it just smashes it down. It's like it's not stiff enough for you to just put your foot in. You got to go back to the olden days and get like the shoehorn out in order for you to get your foot into this shoe. And it becomes totally, no joke, it is a two-man process, right? It's like, I have got to be pulling up at the same time, buddy, that you're pushing down in order for us to get your shoe in. And in this process, what happens is this. The boys are absolutely glued on Paw Patrol. They're watching Paw Patrol and Chase to the Rescue and whatever is going on there. And here is Daddy like, we got 30 seconds to get out the door. We got to get these shoes on. And they're fixated on the TV and what's happening there. And here I am pulling up on the shoe, getting more and more frustrated. I'm like, buddy, come on. You got to help me out here. And his response, Daddy, I'm trying. Like, buddy, I need more than trying here, or this shoe is gonna go through the window, okay? Like, trying just ain't getting it done. You gotta push in. You gotta push and give it everything. Give me 30 seconds of focus here, bud, just to push and stomp your foot in while I'm pulling up. And you see, the reality is every single one of us walk through this in our daily lives. We've got this thing over here that's broken and we know needs attention, be it our marriage, be it our faith, be it our health, mentally, emotionally, physically. And yet there's all these distractions in our lives, all of these things that feel imminent that we've given our attention to and we're watching. And there's things over here that we're like, well, I know that's important and I know that should be done. And so I'm trying. I'm focusing over here, but I'm trying to fix this. God's like, no. If you really want to fix it, you need focus. You got to give it some attention. You got to go into training on this and give it your undivided attention so that you can be successful in this area. Not looking over here, watching the TV. You got to stomp your foot into place in that facet of your life. It's the very reason why Paul, in his passage, makes it clear in verse 25. For everyone who competes in the games goes into, and I helped us out here with a little underline, goes into strict training. Everyone who competes in the game goes into strict training. And when we look back on the original language, when we look back on the Greek of this word strict, the word that was written here is this word agonizomai. And what does it sound like? Agony. And it's defined as this, to contend for victory or to strain every nerve towards the goal. We focus every nerve, every fiber of our being on the calling and the purpose that we have been given as Christ followers. We go for it with everything we have. We put a plan together and we work the plan. That in order to be successful, we have to go into training day after day after day where we make a plan, we work the plan, and we give the plan everything we've got. It's the reason why Paul just doesn't state it once. As he's given advice to a young Timothy, this young dude who's just starting out in ministry, a young man who doesn't know how to do this or what way he should go, you know what advice Paul gives him? Check this out in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7. And to preface this a little bit, right before this, the verse before this, Paul is telling Timothy, like, don't talk like everybody else talks. Don't engage in all the things that everybody else is engaging in. No. Instead, train yourself to be godly. You know what advice Paul was giving Timothy? You can't try to be Christ-like. Hello. You have to train yourself to be like Christ. You have to train yourself to be a light in a dark world. You have to strive and strain for it with everything you've got, giving God your absolute best to be who you have been called to be. You see, the same is true when it comes to every single facet of our lives. God has given us these things, our marriages, our finances, our kids, our relationships, our careers, our health. He has given us these things to live to the full. He wants us right here, right now, to live out these things to the full in our lives. But there's one irrefutable key about training for any of those things. And hear me loud and clear on this. Training is not about starting at the end goal. Training is about working towards the end goal. And some of y'all are like, Ben, isn't that obvious? I know that already. And yet if you're anything like me, that doesn't play out in my everyday life. Because when I commit to change, you know when I want change? I want it tomorrow. I don't want to wait. I don't want it to be that hard. I don't want it to be a long process. I've made up my mind. I want that to get better, and it should get better tomorrow. But the reality is, training doesn't work like that. Training is a process towards the end goal, not starting at the end goal. And you see, what we have to remind ourselves every single day in the training we've been called to embark on when it comes to our faith or when it comes to our marriages or when it comes to our parenting or when it comes to our finances or when it comes to our health is that the real definition of training really revolves around this truth. You see, training is doing what I can do today to enable me to do more tomorrow. Hello. Training is simply about doing what I can do today so that I can do a little bit more tomorrow, so that I can grow a little bit tomorrow, so that I can get a little bit better tomorrow, so that I can get a little bit closer to the greater reward God has for me tomorrow. Can you run a marathon tomorrow? No. No. You can walk a mile tomorrow. Can you get out of debt tomorrow? No. You can pack your own coffee and not go through Starbucks and save yourself the $6 tomorrow. Why? Because you're in training. Can you fix your marriage tomorrow? No. You can tell your spouse sorry for the fight you had last night. You can recognize that you haven't had a meaningful conversation in the last 6 months. And you can sit down, bent on ensuring that you have a meaningful conversation and that you converse and that most importantly, you listen to him or to her and you respond and you empathize with the things that they're going through and the things they're walking through and their career you know nothing about and some days you care nothing about. But you're going to sit down and you're going to care about that and you're going to work towards it. Why? Because you're in training. Can you lose 20 pounds tomorrow? No. But you can cut that one thing out of your diet tomorrow. You see, in every single one of our lives, we have been called to stop trying and to engage in training. And when we train, things get serious. Am I right? Y'all engaged in training before? Like when you engage in training, you get a playlist. That's when the Rocky IV music comes out. Am I right? You start to think about a plan and how you reach that goal. And just this week, I was around some of my friends and they made this stupid decision, y'all, that next October they were going to run a marathon. And you know the first question that has to be asked when you decide to chase a goal that's that lofty? What's the first thing you do? You hop on Google and you look for a training plan that every single day works you towards being able to survive the marathon, right? Not keeling over at the finish line. Can you imagine being at a marathon and standing at the starting line? And there's two guys there standing at the starting line, and they begin to converse with one another, right? And the one guy is like, hey, what did you do to get here? Like, how did you decide to run a marathon? What did you decide to do? And the first guy's like, man, I have been working my butt off for the last 14 months. I found a training plan. I've been working every single day. Like, I put Band-Aids on all the right places and got all the right gear today. Some of you runners know what I'm talking about. Like, I've got the stuff, the gel in my pocket so that when I run out of energy, I can pop that in my mouth in the middle of the race, and I'm committed that I'm gonna make it. But what'd you do? And the second guy's like, I thought it'd be fun to just try a marathon. So I came today. I'm psyched about the free t-shirt. Like, isn't it crazy to think about attaining something incredible in our lives without first acknowledging that it takes training to get there? That it takes a step-by-step process in our lives in order for us to work up to being the people we were called to be. To begin to live our lives as Paul lays out at the end of this passage. In verse 26, he continues this way. So I run with purpose in every step. I am not just shadow boxing. I discipline my body like an athlete, training it to do what it should. Otherwise, I fear that after preaching to others, I myself might be disqualified. Do you catch what Paul didn't say there? Paul didn't say, I'm trying to be an athlete. No. Paul said, I train my body like an athlete. I train myself. I strive with everything I have. I beat my body into submission. And he throws out that word. I discipline myself in order to reach the goal someday so that I won't be disqualified for the greater reward that God has for me in my life. You see, some of us need to step forward and recognize, I'm not trying to be in a great marriage. I'm training myself like I'm in a great marriage. I'm not trying to be healthier physically. I'm training myself like I am a healthy individual. I'm not trying to get my finances together. I'm training myself like I have my finances together. Every single day we walk forward and we discipline ourselves. And hear me on this. Discipline is not natural, guys. It will be difficult. It will take work. It will take a commitment inside of us that there will be days we fall off the horse. And the way in which we know that we're disciplined is when the next day we get back up on it and we keep going. That one failure doesn't disqualify me from what God has called me to and the greater reward he wants for my life. That one failure doesn't cause my God, the creator of the universe, who wants me to experience a greater reward right now, it doesn't make him look at me or love me any less. That God is still fighting for me and still wants the best for me. And because of that, even when I fall short, I'm in training. And so the next day I hop back on and I keep going and I keep pressing and I keep straining with every nerve inside of me to reach the goal that God has given me. About a month ago, I made a decision to incorporate a new discipline into my life. And I made this decision based upon just the craziness of life right now and the schedules of both Krista and I and everything that's being heaped on top of us. That first and foremost, man, I wanted to be able to get out of the office at a decent time. And to be able to go home and to be able to help with the kids. And so I created this new discipline that I wanted to make sure that every single morning I got into the office between 5:30 and 6 a.m. And what I recognized in that discipline when I first began to implement it is this, just to give you a sneak peek into my schedule. At 7:30, Krista leaves for work, and the kids don't go to preschool until 8:30. And so what I recognized is I had about a 90-minute window if I could show up between 5:30 and 6 a.m. in the office every single morning. And that 90-minute window was absolutely perfect. Because I'm a detail-oriented person and a task-oriented person. And in 90 minutes, it didn't allow me enough time to fully dive into completing an entire task. of straightening up the coffee bar, restocking the fridge, resetting all the chairs, getting ProPresenter updated, figuring out the lights. None of those could be accomplished in that amount of time. But what could be accomplished every single morning to start my day and recenter myself spiritually was this, is that I could sit down at my desk and for the first part of every single day, I could pull out a journal and write and pray and commit myself to reading a couple chapters in God's Word, and then every morning reading a chapter in a leadership development book. And you know what, y'all? There are days where I hit the snooze button. But what you guys need to understand about me is this. I am not a morning person. This does not come easy to me, and any effort, any training in the right direction, I'm winning. I'm winning, y'all. And some of you are sitting there and you're like, Ben, anytime you're up between 5:30 and 6 a.m., you ain't winning. That's not winning in my book. And if I drove past the office, there are some days, Ben, you wouldn't be here at that time because you hit the snooze button. But what I recognize is that if I can do it 3 out of 4 days, I'm a whole lot better off than when I was doing it 0 out of 4. And I'm in training, and I have to move in the right direction. I've been given a purpose and a calling, and I'm tired of falling short. I'm tired of settling at 5. I want great. I want the greater reward, and I want to win. And so I have to start playing to win. I have to start taking it serious. I have to start doing more because I've been given a purpose that God has called me to reach. And here's the crazy truth. So have you. It doesn't matter who you are, what your past looks like, what stage of life you find yourself in, whether you're a middle school student, a high school student, a college student, a young adult, or you just classify yourself into that next clump of slightly older than young adults. You see, every single one of us have been given something gigantic in our lives, have been given a goal and a mission and a purpose that is huge. Man, I don't care if you're sitting there and you're 16 years old and you find yourself buying into the lie. No, those big things come sometime down the road when I'm an adult and I'm a grown up. No, God has given you a purpose and a mission right where you're at to make a difference and an impact in your school for the sake of the kingdom. Or maybe you're sitting there and you're 78 years old and you're saying, no, those gigantic things in my past, when I was younger and more mobile and had a whole lot more going on. No, no, no. God has given you something gigantic to accomplish and a mission and a purpose and a way to be an influence and a light in this world exactly where you're at. But in order for you to reach that, in order for us to find ourselves reaching the greater reward that God has designed us for, we have to find ourselves at a place where we stop trying and we start training, where we get serious and we start straining with every nerve inside of us towards the greater reward God has for us. And what I believe with all of my heart is this, is that when I pick up this book, God's promises always hold true. And I serve a God that promises that if we are willing to give everything we have to the plan he has for our lives, even when it gets difficult, even when it doesn't go according to the timing we want, eventually there will come a day where it will all be worth it, where all the training and all the striving and all the difficulty will be worth it. And we will begin to become a people who are capable of saying, I wasn't going for easy anyways. I wasn't looking for easier. No, 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 no. I was always looking for greater. Whatever it takes, I'm willing to train to go after the greater that God has for me. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who is always in our corner, who always wants what's best for us. A God who wants us to experience life and experience it to the full. Who wants us to experience our marriages to the full, our parenting to the full, our finances to the full, our physical, mental, emotional health to the full. But you're also a God who knows that as humanity, in order for us to do that, it's going to require some courageous steps, some steps outside of our comfort zone, some steps through difficulty, some steps to start training. So God, this morning, I pray for myself. I pray for every single person in this room. God, that we become people who are tired of fine, who are tired of easier. We become people who are straining for greater, to experience the calling and the purpose you have for our life, that gigantic thing that still sits out in front of us, no matter where we're at in life, that you're calling us to, that we strain and we strive for that. And we refuse to become people who rationalize away the joy of giving you our absolute best. God, today, may we make a plan and be people who are willing to work that plan. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.